When Jason, Matt, and Ward reached the Presidio, the wagons were ready to go. In fact, Salmon and Saul, both of whom knew what Jason and Ward were up to, had already lined the Conestogas up and started them out the gate. Jason saw someone waving at him, squinted, and realized it was Jenny.
Come on.
Jason grabbed hold of Matt. Ward grabbed the other arm.
Let me go, damn it! I'll knock your blocks off!
Halfway to the wagon, Jason had finally had enough.
Well, that's better.
They dragged Matt's limp body the rest of the way to the wagon and tossed him up into its bed. Jenny covered him over with quilts.
In case anybody gets nosy.
Megan urged the oxen on.
Get on there!
Saul had already tacked up Jason and Ward's horses, and they sprang up on them and went immediately to work. Ward with the herd and Ramuda, and Jason with the wagons. And Jenny ran to drive Salmon Kendall's wagon. Salmon was still passed out in the back. Saul flagged Jason down when they were about a half mile out of the Presidio.
Why didn't you take me along? I've never helped in a jailbreak before.
That's why. I didn't want to start any new habits.
Later that day, while they were slowly working their way north in the shadow of the Santa Rita Mountains, Sheriff Clancy caught up with them. Jason saw him coming and met him at the middle of the caravan.
Well, what brings you up this way, Sheriff?
I think you know the answer to that, Fury. I want him back. No.
What? Who?
Oh, don't play games, Fury. I'll search every single wagon in this train if I have to.
I think you might have a hard time convincing folks to do that, Sheriff. Seeing that you're out of your jurisdiction. And also seeing that you arrested one of our most popular members last night. How's Matt doing, by the way? Have you set a trial date? A few of us would like to come back for the hearing. You know, make sure everything's on the up and up.
Oh, cut the horseshite. You know damn well that McDonald broke out of jail earlier this morning, just before your wagon train pulled out. Well, that's too big a coincidence, Fury.
Well then, I guess we got a problem, Sheriff. Now, I wouldn't mind you searching my wagons. Wouldn't mind it a bit, personally. Although I can't speak for some of the ladies in our party. But see, I gotta get these people to California in a hurry, and we already lost several days trying to get across the Canadian River during a thunderstorm.
Well, that's not my problem.
I think it is.
They sat there, their horses dancing nervously between them while the wagons slowly passed. And then, at last, Sheriff Clancy turned his horse and rode back toward Tucson without a word. Jason sat there on Cleo, watching him go and thanking the Lord for allowing the sheriff to buy into his bluff, especially when it was done to protect a cowardly murdering jackass like Matt McDonald. 2 days later, they swung west again along the old Mormon trail and entered a flat, endless plain of desert scrub and blooming cactus called El Despoblado, a wild, unmapped part of the territory. They made steady progress, although Jason posted several men as scouts. They looked in every direction for Apache, who could use the low cover in their favor. The talk around the campfire in the evenings was turning toward farming, and most of the men agreed that this wide plain would make for fine crops. All it needed was water. Jason pointed out that it would also most likely produce trouble with the Apache, but folks were too excited about the land to listen to him. Additionally, it had been a while since they'd had Indian trouble, and they seemed to have pushed the reality of it away.
Look, there's no trees, and that means no shade.
We could plant some.
The Milchers have already purchased land in California.
I can get my money back, and don't my flock need me here?
All of this was pointless, Jason figured. There was no water, period. Of course, there was water underground here and there, but he didn't mention it. He just wanted to get these folks across the Colorado River and into California. But the next day, they came to a small stream thickly lined with cottonwood trees for as far as the eye could see. The Reverend Milcher proclaimed it a sign from on high, akin to manna in the desert.
I wish he would stick to his half of the holy book.
Folks, in California, trees have already been planted, and towns hungry for new citizens have already been founded. And I'm fairly sure that the rivers and the streams there run year-round, something I can't say for Arizona streams.
They disappear?
They still flow, but they do it underground. At least that's what I'm told. It'll be pretty hard to irrigate your fields when there's no above-ground water to do it with.
I seen it done.
Well, Brother Morton, how?
In Tucson. While you young bucks are out painting the town, I took a little sightseeing tour. They got them big, deep wells dug down there. Got a sort of auger-like contraption in the center of them that brings up the water, and two mules run it. Day and night, the man told me. Of course, I suppose they change the mules out two or three times a day.
Well, there you go. We'll build one of those for the dry season.
You know, the only reason I can think of for you folks staying here, instead of going on to California in some sort of civilization, is that you'll have to buy land in California, and here it's free for the taking.
What you gonna build them auger things out of? Cottonwood?
That's correct, sir.
Don't you know you can't kill cottonwood? Hell, fence posts made from it sprout in the ground and give you a fence full of trees in no time. Can't imagine what kind of bushy nonsense you'd get if you was to stick them down a well.
He's right.
We can get other kinds of wood, and we've got our wagons. There's plenty of wood in them, and I bet it isn't cottonwood.
All right. Those who want to stay here can. Those who want to go on to California, I'll lead them. Anybody? Fine. I'll stay and help you get your town started then. I owe you that much.
Hurrah!
Hurrah! Hurrah!
Tomorrow I shall consecrate this land, and we shall also name our new town.
Well, looks like decent grazing land anyhow.
I vote we name it for Jason's daddy.
A wise idea.
Is that a second?
What else would it be?
Very well, then. All those in favor?
Aye!
Opposed?
You're going to name the town Jedediah?
No, boy. Fury. And we'll build it right here, right where we are standing.
Heads nodded all round. Jason was beaten, and he knew it. These fools would try to build their own town right here, and the newly christened Fury would fall to the Apache, or just plain dry up and blow away.
If you're set on it.
Jason and Megan were strolling along the inside of the circled wagons because Jason didn't want to take a chance on Megan getting snake bit out there in the brush and grass. Since Tucson, he had given up on trying to keep their mutual attraction private, and they strolled openly, arms linked.
You don't like this idea, do you, Jason? The whole thing about the town, I mean.
No.
But why not?
Weren't you listening earlier?
Yes, but I thought you were just trying to paint the worst possible picture to dissuade the Reverend Melcher from giving up his land in California. And let the others know that it won't be easy. We know it won't be easy, Jason. But we're here. We have water and land. Land forever. And it's just here for the taking.
You realize you're probably going to build right smack in the center of somebody's rangeland?
But nobody owns the range, Jason.
True. But some people like to think they do. And then, there are the Apache.
They haven't bothered us yet.
Not yet. But that doesn't mean they won't. We're sitting in the middle of their home range, too.
You're not going to stay, are you?
Not any longer than I have to. I'll stay long enough to help get the first buildings up and make sure you're settled in, but then I'm going.
All right. I understand, I guess. Will you take Jenny with you?
Yes.
Does she know about this? She's pretty stuck on my brother, you know.
Tough.
Tough? That's all you have to say?
What I mean is that it's going to be tough on her, but she's young. What does she know yet? And Matthew doesn't strike me as the type to want to settle down.
And I guess you don't strike me as that type either.
But Megan...
Good night, Jason!
Megan turned and ran for the wagon she shared with Jenny.
Saul? Saul!
Yes, Jason, what is it?
Saul looked up from his work, which at the present was digging a hole.
What's the hole for?
For a well, you dig a hole.
I think maybe you'd better start again, about 20, 25 yards over. You're right in the middle of the trail. What are you digging it for, anyway?
Why, the town's water supply, for when the stream dries up.
Saul, you best make it farther than that, then. If we're going to grow up an entire town around your well, We best leave it room enough to grow without every wagon train coming west going right through somebody's front garden.
Again, wisdom beyond his years.
And get somebody to help you.
Jason walked away. He had other fish to fry. Everybody seemed to be of the same mind as Saul in thinking that nobody would ever again use this trail. The wagons were still circled smack on it, with the shallow trail ruts running right through the circle. Actually, this gave Jason a modicum of hope. Other trains would come through here and could pick up those who became dissatisfied with their choice to stay. But folks had already begun setting up shop right where their rigs sat. Canvas wagon covers were untied and pulled out and staked up for shade, just like Olympia Morelli's was each night to make the cook tent. People were spreading out, freeing up possessions they'd kept squirreled away since the start of their journey. He was looking for Megan, hoping to clear up their little misunderstanding of the previous night, but was told by Ward Wanamaker that she was gone. And his horse, too.
Yeah, Matt was heading off to scout a good place to headquarter a ranch. Megan went with him, and your sister, too. She took your Cleo and said you wouldn't mind.
Actually, he did mind quite a bit. If Matt wanted to wander around on the plain and act as Apache bait, that was his choice. But he had no business taking the girls with him. Jason pulled a horse from the Ramuda, borrowed a saddle and bridle, and made ready to go and bring them back as he swung up into the saddle.
Which way did they head?
Southeast. They were following the creek. You want I should ride along, Jason? Walsh is right over there, too. You might want a couple extra guns.
Yeah. Be glad of your company, Ward.
The men spotted the Apache before the Apache spotted them. There were two braves, and they seemed to be trailing somebody. Probably Matt and the girls, because they kept to the cottonwoods along the stream. Wash pulled out his rifle and started to take aim, but Jason shot out an arm and shoved the barrel aside.
No! Let's see if we can take care of this without any bloodshed.
But there's only Apache.
You shoot two, and you'll have 200 down here looking for them. And finding the train.
Wash reluctantly shoved his rifle back into its boot. If Ward had any feelings one way or the other, they didn't show on his face. The Apache had stopped, and so did the men. At a signal from Jason, the men dismounted. Jason, the only one tall enough to see over the slightly rolling scrub and grass, kept the Indians in sight.
What is it? What do you see?
I figure that Matt and the girls have stopped up there somewhere. The Apache are either just waiting them out or looking for a chance to attack. Or hell, maybe they don't think it's worth it for a kid and two girls.
Worth what?
Worth possibly getting shot. They'll have to have seen that Matt's armed. If I know Jenny, she's got Papa's shotgun on her. Mount up, boys.
What you thinking, Jason?
Yeah, what?
We're gonna charge those Indians, man. Charge them full out, yelling and yelping and hollering. There are three of us and two of them. And they know there are more of us ahead of them. What I figure to do is split them off to the east at high speed, then pick up Matt and the girls and hightail it back to the camp.
Jason kicked his horse and took off. Ward and Wash followed him, thank the Lord. They all three hooted and hollered at full volume, and the Indians, shocked and surprised, did exactly what he'd hoped they'd do. They took off at a gallop, heading east over the prairie. And not one single shot was fired by either party. Jason was proud of that. The three kept up their hollering until they came in sight of Matt and the girls. Matt was trying to see what all the noise was about. The remains of a picnic, hastily abandoned, were scattered at his feet. Jenny and Megan had taken shelter behind some weedy cottonwoods at the timber's edge. Jenny had her shotgun raised and ready.
Don't shoot, Jenny!
What the hell are you doing, Fury?
Saving your butt from Apache. Get up on your horses, girls. They're going to come back, McDonald. No two ways about it. I get out of here fast if I were you.
Jason took off. Wash, Ward, and the girls behind him. Jason was busy trying to keep an eye on the girls, watch the east for returning Indians, and guide his horse back to the circle of wagons. When they came skidding in, Jason leapt from the saddle and tossed his reins to Ward, then immediately yanked Jenny down from Cleo's saddle.
Jason!
What were you thinking? Don't you know you could have been killed? Or worse?
Apache, everybody! On your guard!
Folks grabbed their guns, tucked their children away, dropped whatever they'd been doing before, and waited. An hour passed before Jason allowed them to let down their guard, but he still assigned Ward and Wash to keep watch. The people under his care might think he was crazy, but he didn't care. He was still responsible for them. And they were, by God, going to keep breathing so long as he was around, whether they liked it or not. Night fell, and the Indians still hadn't returned. Saul and Salmon and Milt had managed to dig deep enough to find water. Salmon immediately threw his hat in the air and climbed up out of the hole, certain that their work was done. But Saul knew they'd have to go deeper. The stream was running now and the water level was high. It would go lower. How much lower, he didn't know. All he knew was that he had forgotten how much he hated well digging. Saul also knew that Milt Billings had been hired by Jedediah to care for their livestock and help them across the western expanse. But somehow, Saul didn't believe that Jedediah could have known Billings very well. The whole day long, Milt had complained about Jason seeing Indians where there weren't any. As far as Saul was concerned, if Jason said there were Apache out there were Apache, no two ways about it. And he found his anger with Milt slowly coming to a boil. First off, the ground was too hard. Well, they were all three having to dig it, weren't they? The next complaint on Milt's list was that Jason had taken Milt's horse when he galloped off into the scrub, and when he'd brought him back, he hadn't even walked him out. Well, Saul had seen Ward Wanamaker walking out four horses while they were all arming themselves for the supposed Apache attack, which he was extremely glad hadn't come. By the time they crawled up out of that hole, the usually peaceable Saul was ready to whack Milt Billings over the head with a shovel. But he didn't. As the three of them sat there, dangling their legs over the edge and watching the water level slowly rise, Saul's boys came out to join them.
Good evening, Father. Mother says dinner will be ready in a half hour.
What? You don't like what we're having?
Mrs. Jameson gave canned beets again. Even Mr. Cow won't eat them.
Well, we'll see what can be done, David.
If he was my kid, he'd eat them whether he liked them or not.
Lucky for him, he is not yours.
Don't get uppity. All's I meant was that out here you gotta eat what you're given when you're given it. Because you ain't likely to be given much of anything again.
Well, speak for yourself. I will see to my own.
Stop it, you two!
Apache! Everybody in! Apache!
Saul scooped up his boys and ran for the wagons, with Salmon hard on his heels.
I thought Indians weren't supposed to attack this close to night.
Don't believe everything you read.
Jenny was beside Jason, ready to reload. Rachel, having secreted the boys in the bottom of the wagon, joined Saul.
Sorry if your meal is ruined, Rachel.
It will do the stew a good to wait a little, and Olympia had already taken the biscuits off the fire.
Jason tossed a box of cartridges towards Saul.
In case you run out.
Help!
But Saul was staring out at something much closer than the approaching cloud of dust.
Dear God, it's Milt! He fell in!
Jason shifted his gaze and saw the well that Saul had been digging, and saw Milt trying to pull his way out. The water must have risen, and it looked like he was having a hard time gaining any purchase on the muddy walls.
Stay put, Milt. Keep your head down.
I keep it down. I'm gonna drown.
Damn!
Jason stood up and made a run for Milt. When he reached Milt, the dust cloud was almost upon him, and he was vaguely surprised that the Indians weren't screaming war cries, weren't screaming anything at all. But he reached down and gripped Milt's hand and yanked with all his might. Milt came up out of that well like a catfish on a hook and scrambled back toward the wagons on Jason's heels, spraying well water as he went. They both skidded inside just as the forms of the men within the cloud could be made out. Not Apache. Not Indians at all. The party reined in about 20 feet from the circled wagons, and a single rider emerged from the yellow mist of dust still surrounding the rest of his comrades. He was dressed in an ordinary way, with Levi's, boots, and a flannel shirt. And he had a badge pinned to his belt.
Hello, the wagons!
Who's that out there? Be careful, there's a newly dug well about 5 yards from where you're sitting that horse.
Thanks for the warning, friend. I'm Deputy U.S. Marshal Bill Gordon with a party of deputies. We've been out after Juan Alba and his band. Finally picked up tracks and, well, here we are. Good thing, too, because we're about to lose sight of them.
How many men you got with you, Marshal?
15.
Can we feed 15 extra, Mrs. Cohen?
Certainly.
They can have David's beets.
Hooray!
Come on in, Marshal. We're just about to have some dinner.
Gee, Apache's my butt.
There's plenty of stew to go around, and one of Marshal Gordon's men gobbled up David's detested beets and asked for more. There was plenty of stew to go around, and one of Marshal Gordon's men gobbled up David's detested beets and asked for more. Mrs. Jameson was visibly pleased, but offered no seconds, which came as a surprise to no one. While they ate, Gordon regaled them all with the flamboyant and sometimes grisly exploits of Juan Alba, or, as the marshal frequently referred to him, the Scourge of the Borderlands. The kids, from little Constantine Morelli and Abraham Cohen to Sammy Kendall and Seth Milcher, were transfixed, and Gordon played to his audience. Jason had the feeling that this Alba was someone akin to the outlaws of Kansas and Missouri, blamed for most of the deeds done by other gangs, whether they were in the area or not. Milt Billings was still drying out beside the fire, and still grousing about getting dunked in the well and the Apache alarm being raised, and having hired on in the first place. Finally, Jason couldn't stand it any longer. He was enjoying Gordon's stories too, and quietly stood up. He walked over to Milt.
You can leave any time, you know. Nothing's holding you here.
I just might. These people are daft. Want to build a town in the middle of nowhere? In the middle of Apache country?
I agree with you, Milt. But this is the place they picked.
Well, it sure ain't my choice for a quiet neighborhood.
Like I said, Milt, the door's open. Marshal Gordon's pulling out in the morning. You can go with him.
Where's he headed?
Prescott.
I'll take the last of my wages tonight, if you don't mind, Jason.
Jason paid him on the spot. He was sorry to lose Milt's gun, but that was all. After dinner, Jason and Megan walked around the inside of the circled wagons.
You were horrible to Jenny this afternoon.
Should have been horrible to you, too. You were in real danger. Those two braves were eyeing you. Tonight, by rights, Matt would be dead, and you and Jenny would be Mrs. Kills with a Spear or something.
Well, I'm glad you came and saved us. I don't want to be Mrs. Kills with a Spear.
Jason looked down at her. This setter-haired elfin thing who had stolen his heart, and he was tempted, so tempted, to just throw his future aside, just chuck it all and promise to stay with her, ask her to marry him, to be with him always. But he fought off the temptation. He walked her back to the wagon, then relieved Wash of sentry duty. He had a lot of thinking to do. Summer came, and under the blistering heat, the pioneers built homes and businesses from the adobe bricks Jason showed them how to make from dirt, water, and straw. Saul dug his well deeper and deeper and deeper, and eventually the stream dried up. Matt McDonald began construction of his new ranch house several miles south of Fury. He had grand dreams, all right, and he labored out there night and day, with no one but Gil Collins, whom he had hired away from Jason to help him. Jason oversaw the town proper. Key and Ward and Salmon and several other men helped Saul build his hardware store, with living quarters on a second floor. They used the beds and side timbers of both Saul's wagons to floor the second story and chopped down 10 enormous cottonwoods to make the exposed beams of the ceilings. Somewhere along the line, they had mutually decided to all work on one man's home or business until it was finished, and then move on, as a gang, to the next. It worked fine, and in this way they also built the Nordstrom's Mercantile and a livery and got started on a house for Salmon Kendall, who had recently wed Carrie English and taken on Chrissy and Rags as his own too. Chrissy seemed to be getting along famously with Sammy and Peony, who enjoyed having a little sister. They had taken to Carrie too, although it was obvious that the loss of their mother still cut deep. Around Saul's well, they built a low wall, put an A-frame over it for reeling buckets up and down, and it sat in the center of a large patio in the very center of what was becoming the town of Fury. Around the perimeter of this town square, the buildings slowly rose here and there, like the scattered teeth of an old man. In between, there sat wagons not yet evacuated or abandoned, their canvases spread and staked like open-air tents. And the population was growing, too. They had picked up 4 more wagon loads of folks just last week. Jenny, now 16, had bloomed over these last few months. Her blonde hair was streaked quite fetchingly by the sun, her complexion glowed, and she had grown a half-inch taller and filled out. She was no longer the gawky colt of a girl he remembered, but a beautiful young woman. The realization came as something of a shock to him. One night after the work was done and they finished their supper, Jason turned to Jenny.
It's really turning into something.
You didn't think it would? I always knew they'd make something wonderful.
You always had more faith than anybody I ever knew, baby sister.
Papa used to call me that, too.
I know.
You're thinking about leaving, aren't you?
Yes, I guess I am.
Then you'll go alone, Jason. I'm not going with you. I'm going to marry Matt McDonald and stay here and raise babies, horses, and cattle in that order.
No. No, you're not. You're coming with me. You're going to live where there are no Indians, no bandits, where people can act like people and not animals, Jenny. And you're going to marry some nice, civilized, educated man, not a fool like Matt McDonald.
Jenny slapped Jason's face so hard, it rattled his teeth.
I am, too, going to marry Matt.
Jenny, has he even asked?
He's not a fool!
Jenny turned and ran to the wagon before he could think to say anything. She was probably hurrying to repeat everything he'd said to Megan. Great. Just great. And he stood there, rubbing his cheek and wondering what in the world had possessed him to choose those particular words. He probably shouldn't have called Matt a fool, for one thing, although that was the nicest tag he could think of to hang on him. Stupid son of a bitch would have been closer to it. And then he began to think about what she'd said. Raise babies and horses and cattle. In that order? He marched after her, hands and jaw clenched. If that bastard had been at her, he'd kill him. He reached the wagon, climbed up onto the seat, and turned backward to face the cargo area.
Jenny!
2 faces popped up beneath the quilts, Megan's and Jenny's. Megan looked surprised, but Jenny just looked mad.
Jenny, has Matt McDonald... Has he...
Jason Fury!
Has he got you in a family way, Jenny?
Jason! Of course not! How dare you even think that I...
Thank God.
The next morning, after talking to Jenny again and making something of a peace with her, Jason made ready to leave. He'd resigned himself to follow Jenny's wishes. After all, she was grown, and he couldn't exactly kidnap her to bring her along, could he? He had decided to go up to San Francisco instead of back east. It was a big town, and a rich one. Surely they had college up there, too, and plenty of opportunities for an enterprising young man to work his way through school. Also, it meant that he'd be closer to Jenny and Megan. Maybe, after he got settled and got some education under his belt, he could come back for Megan. If she'd have him. If she hadn't already married.
Stop it, you pickerwood.
Jason continued saddling up Cleo. If he didn't, he'd talk himself into staying. That was the last thing he wanted to do. So he managed to pull his mind away from Megan and set it on a more useful purpose. He figured to head due west to the coast and then ride straight north. He'd never exactly taken that route before. His total experience of the road west was 1 trip over the southern route when he was 14 and 1 trip over the Oregon Trail when he was 12, both of which had been overseen by his father. But he figured that if he did as he had planned, he couldn't miss San Francisco.
Jason, you're really going then? Jenny told me, but I didn't want to believe her. I thought you'd stay until the whole town was built anyway.
You got a good enough start on everything. You know towns. It'll never be finished.
Jason.
Jason kissed Megan. He kissed her hard and long, knowing that he might never be allowed this privilege again. And then, abruptly, he let go of her, leaving her swaying, and mounted his mare. His throat was so thick that he had no words to say goodbye. He simply nodded, his heart full, then rode away. Roughly 20 minutes after Jason bade goodbye to Megan and rode west, Matthew was awakened from his siesta by Gil Collins, whom he'd hired to help him build his house.
Matt! Matt! Quick, wake up!
What?
Gil hurried down from the ladder, which leaned against the partially finished second story, and started running for the horses.
Riders! Coming fast from the south!
I suppose these are more Fury's imaginary Apache?
Gil leapt into the saddle, grabbed Matt's pinto by the reins, and brought him to Matt at a hard trot.
Not imaginary! Look!
Coward.
Matt swung up on the horse just to get a higher vantage point. He looked toward the south.
Ugh, damn it!
Pya!
He had only loped about 30 yards before the first arrow sank into his arm like a hot branding iron. He didn't look back. He was afraid to see what was chasing him, although the first whoops were just now reaching his ears. He hunkered lower in the saddle and dug his spurs into the Pinto's flanks. His Pinto was fast, faster even than Jason's Clio or any of his father's Morgans. He slowly gained on Gil, who was racing for town, and then drew even with him. He glimpsed the fear on Gil's face and saw him draw his revolver. In fury, Saul was the first one to hear the shots.
Listen, do you hear?
That's out Matchway. You think they're hunting rabbits?
Too close.
Salmon scurried up the ladder to the window of Nordstrom's second floor, then stood up in the window casing to get a better look.
What?
Salmon came halfway down the ladder, then jumped the rest of the way.
Apache! And Matt and Gil are riding in, hellbound for leather!
Circle the wagons!
Then Saul remembered that half their wagons were broken up or staked out.
Apache! Get your arms! Apache!
Where's my rifle?
Randall Nordstrom was already upstairs in his store pointing a rifle out the glassless window. Saul ran to the northwest edge of the square in the ammunition wagon, which hadn't been yet unloaded, and grabbed a couple handfuls of cartridge boxes. One he tossed up to Randall. The others he passed out to the men who were already running to Fury's southern perimeter. To his side, Rachel ran out the front door of his store.
Rachel! The children!
Under their beds! Saul, come now!
Saul ran for her just as Matt McDonald thundered between them. Saul didn't have to think twice. He could see Matt was wounded as the boy leapt off his horse. Already, the men in the southern side of the square were firing.
Matt! Come! Matt, come here! Come inside!
Gil Collins came into town just as Saul helped Matt through the door. Gil had taken an arrow deep in his back and was slumped over his horse's neck.
Whoa! Whoa there!
Saul flagged down the tired horse and slid Gil's limp body to the ground.
Yeah!
Then he slapped the horse on the rump before he dragged Gil inside and bolted the door behind them. Catty corner across the town square to the south, the men opened fire. Jason turned to take one last look at the distant horizon, one last look at the land in which he'd left his sister and his love and, he admitted, his friends. Something was wrong with the horizon. Above the line of trees that followed the creek, there rose a thin, moving line of dust, and it was moving toward Fury. His first thought was Apache, but then he got a grip, telling himself that it was likely another false alarm, probably just another federal marshal out on another fool's errand. But he turned around anyway and headed back where he'd come from. He urged the Palomino into a soft lope. He couldn't be too careful, he supposed, and he could always leave again in the morning. Maybe he could get Jenny to make him up some beef sandwiches for the road if they slaughtered a steer tonight. Jason slowed up on the far side of the creek and made his way through the trees on foot, leading his horse. The sounds and cries were unmistakable now. This was not an errant marshal. These were Apache on a raid. It sounded like a passel of them, too. Still on the other side of the creek, hidden from the attackers, he made his way upstream, or what would have been upstream if there'd been any water flowing, until he was at the far north edge of the town. Then he mounted his horse, wove through the cottonwoods, and at their edge, suddenly raced forward toward the ammo wagon. He knew the men had to be running low by now. The Apache were so preoccupied by the settlers, who seemed to have primarily grouped at the south end of town, that they didn't notice him, and he grabbed up all the ammunition he could carry in a gunny sack, left Cleo behind the wagon, and hurried along the fronts of the buildings on the east side of the square, the sack of ammo in one hand and his gun in the other. Still, no one saw him until a door suddenly opened and he found himself yanked inside. He turned his gun on the person that had dragged him in, then saw it was Saul.
You came back.
Looks like.
Jason handed the ammunition bag over. While Saul dug through it, Jason spied Gil in the corner, hurt bad. He didn't need to ask what had happened.
Where's Morelli?
South wall. Met McDonald's upstairs. He galloped in about 2 shakes before the Apache.
Figures. Got everything you need?
Yes.
Then get back to it. I gotta get down to the men.
He snatched back the sack and turned for the door, then hesitated.
Where are your boys?
Upstairs. Rachel put them under their beds.
Bring them down. First thing the Apache will do, if we can't turn them back, is set fire to the roofs.
What? But how?
Flaming arrows.
The new livery was already on fire. Flames licked at the cottonwood roof, bellowed from the windows, and ran the length of the new cottonwood fence. It billowed black smoke.
Well, I suppose that'll keep from sprouting.
Hunkered low, he made his way toward the battle. Above him, in front of Nordstrom's, he heard a shot ring out, and looked up just in time to see the muzzle of a rifle withdraw.
That you, Randall?
Yeah!
Jason dug through the bag until he found 44 rimfire cartridges.
Catch! Ammo!
Nordstrom's head and one arm popped through the opening, and he snatched up the box of cartridges Jason threw.
Thank you!
Jason scuttled down the street. Somebody had seen him. 3 Apache arrows buried themselves in the dirt at his feet. He pulled his gun and fired back, although he didn't know exactly who to fire at. Jason shot 2 braves that were hacking at the roof of Milcher's new church. He didn't know who shot the other one, but all 3 tumbled to the ground like rag dolls.
Oh!
He was rewarded for this by an Apache arrow that sank into his thigh. All he could do for the time being was break off the shaft. Some of the Apaches had guns, but as far as he could tell, they didn't have any repeaters. Yet. Limping, he slid around the corner of the building into an alley and across it to peek around the corner of the wagon parked at its side. Savages were swarming over the buildings now. He knew he'd never get any ammunition through to his people. And then he suddenly remembered that Salmon Kendall had an old rifle, one that took powder and ball. And in that sack, he'd put balls and powder for Salmon. He had an idea. It was dangerous, and it might not work at all. It was all he had at the moment. He ducked back into the shadows of the wagon's undercarriage and quickly unraveled 3 burlap strings from the bag, which he proceeded to braid together, just as he had braided his sister's hair when she was younger. He affixed one end of the braid to the bag and then pulled out the small keg of powder, the smallest one he'd been able to find in the ammo wagon. He opened it and shook half its contents out over everything else in the sack, and also over the length of his makeshift fuse. He reclosed the half-full keg and stuck it back inside the bag, then lit the fuse. In the second it took to throw the bomb, he took another arrow to the shoulder.
What am I? Pincushion?
He jumped back into the shadow of the wagon again and waited. Nothing happened. Damn it. either the quickness of the throw had blown out the fuse, or the concussion when it hit had knocked the fuse free of the sack. Either way, his makeshift bomb hadn't gone off. He crawled underneath the wagon, and on his belly, he took aim.
Take cover, man!
The bag exploded in a thick haze of black smoke, and bullets zinged every which way. Since the Indians were out in the open, it did them by far the most damage. Bodies fell right and left, scattered in piles like autumn leaves, and the wood over Jason's head was splintered by three wild slugs. Fortunately, most of the townsmen had heard and heeded his warning and jumped back inside what few buildings there were. He still heard shots being fired inside the buildings. Blood flowed in a river from Jason's leg. He felt weak, and with the last of his strength, he attempted to tie off the leg with his bandana. That was the last thing he remembered anyway, trying to put the bandana around his thigh, and it being incredibly difficult. When he woke, he was in Nordstrom's Mercantile, laid out on a wide plank held up by two sawhorses. And the first notion that entered his mind was that they were readying him for burial. But then Dr. Morelli appeared at his side.
How do you feel, Jason?
Ooh. Like I've been on a 3-day drunk.
Well, that's the laudanum and the blood loss. That arrow you took to the leg nearly killed you. Be more careful next time, son. And now, if you'll pardon me, I have other patients. Lie still, try to sleep.
Doc, can I see my sister and Megan McDonald?
They're toting water to the men putting out the fire at the livery. They'll be along soon enough.
They were both all right and unscathed if they were well enough to carry water. He fell into a deep and dreamless sleep. When he woke again, it was night, and Jenny was sitting by his side.
It's about time.
And what time will that be?
It's 9. I saved you some supper if you're interested.
Jason was very interested and sat up to take his food. His arm was sore, but he knew it would pass. He checked under the bandage, and from the burn surrounding it had seen that Morelli had resorted to a little bit of old-time frontier medicine. He cut off most of the shaft, cut a groove in what remained, filled it with gunpowder, and shoved it out the other side of Jason's shoulder while it was burning, removing the arrow and cauterizing the wound all at once. Smart. He scraped the plate clean in 5 minutes.
Didn't know you were that hungry, or I would have brought more.
I don't know I was that hungry either. Who lived and who died? And what happened to the rest of the Apache?
The Apache ran off.
Jenny?
Dead will be quicker.
Thank God for that.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Who'd we lose?
Gil Collins. He was dead halfway through the battle. He was dead when Dr. Morelli got to him. Elmer Jameson. He was freeing the horses from the livery when the Indians set it on fire. He never came out. Mr. Nordstrom got hit with an arrow, but he'll be all right, Dr. Morelli says. Same thing for Matt McDonald and Ward Wanamaker.
And that's it?
One of the new people, too, the ones that stayed from the last train that came through, I don't know his name, but he took an arrow to the neck and a lance to the side, and the doctor said he must have had an angel sitting on his shoulder. Both of them missed anything vital.
The Mortons?
Ward and Salmon rode up to see them. They were fine. I guess that when your little powder keg thing went off, Miss Europa fainted. That's what Zachary said, anyway.
Mr. Morton.
Mr. Zachary Morton.
And Megan?
We've been taking turns sitting with you. She left to stretch her legs about 5 minutes before you woke up, you ravenous beast, you.
Oh.
Lay back down. The doctor said you were to stay flat on your back for at least 2 days.
Easy for him to say. He doesn't have to lie on a couple of wooden planks with no mattress and no pillow.
Oh, don't worry. Megan's bringing quilts and a pillow from our wagon.
The door opened, and instead of Megan, there stood a contingent of townspeople, Salmon Kendall in the lead. Megan followed, her arms full of bedding. The other members of his party followed suit as they filed in.
We've had us a meeting.
What sort of meeting?
Well, first off, we want to thank you for some mighty fast thinking this afternoon. We thought you'd gone off to California.
I came back.
And why'd you do that?
I saw the dust cloud. Didn't know if it was another Marshall or Apache, but didn't figure it was worth taking the chance.
You see? Loyal he is.
And brave.
Salmon, you heard me say it. Jason Fury would not let us down.
I heard.
Isn't our town named for his papa? Is not Fury a name to be reckoned with in the West?
Get to the point, Salmon.
And he sees to the heart of the matter.
The point is, Jason, we had us a little meeting, and we elected you Sheriff of Fury.
You did what?
For a term of 2 years, effective immediately.
God bless you, son.
I won't do it.
I believe you will.
Why?
Because you can't quit unless the mayor accepts your resignation.
And I'm the mayor. I believe our own Sheriff Fury needs his rest now, folks. Shall we let him have it, or should we stay and argue some more about things that can't be changed?
The crowd began to funnel out through the door. Jason closed his eyes in resignation.
Oh, crud.
A Town Called Fury is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2006, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Thomas Penny, Danny Gavigan, Terrence Aselford, Sherry Simpson, Christopher Graybill, Tim Gatman, Tim Carlin, David Coyne, Casey Platt, Michael Glenn, Elizabeth Demery, Andy Clements, Mort Shelby, Sonny Lasky, Kate Foster, Stephen Carpenter, Richard Rowan, James Konacek, M.B. Van Dorn, Nanette Savard, Ren Casey, Dylan Lynch, Ken Jackson, and Elizabeth Jernigan. Directed by Nanette Savard. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Rogers. Additional original music by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Produced by Rick Rowan and Wayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed A Town Called Fury, be sure to look for the series Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, The First Mountain Man, and Sidewinders. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other graphic audio titles.
Do you know your name?
Gailara Vada.
And do you know where you are?
You're the mercenaries.
Yes.
When can I get back to my ship?
After the Major talks to you, probably.
Captain Vada, we have a problem. We need a place to stash some neutral civilians. Your ship is more than adequate for that task.
Have you ever been in charge of a refugee situation?
No. You have suggestions?
The captains of the other Civ ships are going to think they should be running this. You have to convince them otherwise.
We want to talk to you.
This is ridiculous!
Unbelievable!
You get us killed!
Come on!
You're exceeding your authority!
This is a cargo hold!
Enough! I'm lucky to be alive, and so are you. Don't push your luck!
You know, from inside those cargo holds, they don't have far to go to access the linkages with hardware.
If they wanted to mess us up, they could.
I was afraid of that.
Drive just came on, Captain. Full boost. I can't get it off.
And I can't get anywhere with the nav board.
It's time to let more experienced officers take over.
Don't do it, Kai!
Gary?
Don't let him get the ship!
Let him go.
Hand us your captain's wallet. Then we'll see.
Vata's War. Book 1. Trading in Danger. Part 2. In Graphic Audio. If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.